my great pleasure to once again welcome into the studio, into our new studio, because she hasn't been into this new place yet, Representative Shelley Hughes. Welcome, Representative Hughes.
Good morning, and I'm going to start off by correcting you just a little bit. I have been in here, but not to be on the radio. I just came by.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
And noticed all the quilts and the posters and just your new digs. So
right. You have visited, but this is the time when you get a chance to speak into the microphone. And this is kind of an interesting moment in time. In part, I know, because what we have is, I've been counting them, the paper's been counting them, the third special session of this year coming up. It'll be starting later this week. And for that, you get a chance to go back down to Juneau. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I will start off by saying I am a bit concerned that we are going to Juneau instead of handling it here in South Central. I know the folks in Juneau really want to host us, but I also know that I believe that is a greater cost to us. Would be more cost-effective, Mike, I think, to bring about 20 legislators and house them in South Central, which is the number that live outside the South Central area, and allow it in the upper 30s, I believe, we could sleep in our own beds and take care of the business, because it is limited. We're just going to be focused on the gas line. Instead, we're going to move 57 legislators down and have to deal with hotels and lodging costs and that kind of thing. So I am a bit concerned about that, and there's a lot of debate about the capital, but we have voted to have it up here. We just haven't funded it. So I'll start off by saying that. Don't hold me responsible for the cost of the special session, basically.
Well, and of course, there have been a whole bunch of things that have been raised as issues around costs, most notably in the paper. And I think your colleague, Representative Culver, has spoken to that issue. And I'm talking about the travel to Seattle for a conference by a number of legislators. Mm-hmm. And kind of an interesting expense there. Still to be maybe determined results, because the description was a conference. I've been to conferences. Many people have been to conferences, and we come away with some useful information. It, I think, caught people's attention because of the dollar figure of the stay in hotels and so on. Did you have any comments about that process?
Well, I was concerned about that as well. And, you know, there were legislators listed that went on that trip. And the expenses. I wasn't on that list, but I did go on that trip. But I didn't charge the state a penny. Because I felt that we're at a time where we must be very careful. And I also, in that regard, before that article came out, before there was any discussion, I was actually headed up to Fairbanks with my staffer. I chair or co-chair the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Legislative Task Force. And there was a large gathering of industry and academia regarding unmanned aircraft systems, and I planned to go up for it. I was able to get a great ticket, I want to say $95 one way or something like that. My staffer, there was mix-up and communication, and the ticket purchase was very delayed. And so it was not purchased ahead of time at the good deal. And so, you know, that was something we dealt with. I said, we are not going to we're not going to charge the state because we purchased it late. That will come out of our pockets. So, you know, that's the mindset I have. This is a tough time for the state. And I applaud my colleagues who have been very aware of that. And I hope that the rest of them get the message that they should be limiting and probably stopping most travel. This is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far we've talked a little bit about associated costs for the operation of the legislature, and I know that there are a number of topics we have somewhat limited time, but I know that you were one of the respondents to a survey that went out, and I have the results of that were published in Sunday's paper. I was able to catch up and and read through that. And basically, there were kind of yes-no questions asked, and there was certainly a minority of the total legislature that responded. And the responses seemed to run in general favor of doing something in 2016. And the question in 2016's legislative session is what that would be. And I think that there has been for a long time a discussion about further trimming the budget. Mm-hmm. You use the term trim. Other people said cut, reduce the budget. Before taking up other topics of additional forms of revenue, whether it were taxes or some percent of market value of use of the permanent fund, any of those kinds of things. But there's been some concern or expressed that the amount we're talking about of a budget deficit running in billions of dollars is not going to be possible to cut $2 billion out of the budget. What's your idea about that? How do you get to $2 billion of cuts, I guess?
Okay, thank you for the question, Mike. And I just want to pick up on one comment about our previous discussion, and then we can delve into the budget. And that is, I just want to clarify that trip to Fairbanks that I made that
sure.
only charged the state for the economy ticket. I just want to make clear we weren't just going up there to hang out with industry and academia. We actually had a scheduled legislative task force meeting
there. Sure. Right.
And that's important because we want the public to be able to access those meetings to provide public comment. We always hold public comment. And, of course, on that particular topic, a lot of people are very concerned about privacy. And so I just wanted to mention that there was a legislative
That's an important point because that distinguishes in some strong way between going to that event, a legislative event, et cetera, versus going to a conference that is not a legislative meeting. Committee meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes,
got that.
And we also hunted for the cheapest lodging, and my staff and I shared lodging space. So there
okay.
you go. Now to the budget. First, if I could ask you a question, because
sure.
I read the article yesterday. Could you remind us how many responded? How many were from the Senate? How many were from the House? And how many Republicans?
Two. Well, it's relatively easy. Two from the Senate.
It was one from the majority, one from the minority. That, and in the House?
That's true. And I think there were nine from the House. I'm going to count them again to make sure, but I believe that's correct. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yes, nine from the House.
Okay. And of those in the House, were those all in the majority?
No. Representative Guerra responded, yes. And there might have been one other, but from the Senate, there was one each, as you pointed out, and the rest were primarily from the majority.
So it's a total of 11. I was thinking it was 12. But
yeah, the majority of respondents were from the majority. Yes.
Which I found really, really fascinating. I was surprised. I thought that there might be few from the majority answered, and actually 11 out of 60 or 12 or whatever it was out of 60 was fairly low. It was short term, a short notice.
Sure. Right.
We got it in. I think it was due 3 days later, and I will say. Since the special session has been announced, it seems our calendars really fill up. Because when you think about it, Mike, it's a 30-day session,
right?
Which brings us back right Thanksgiving, and then we're into the holidays, and then in early January,
getting ready to go down,
preparing to go back.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, it really condensed the time that we have to meet with folks. So I believe most of my colleagues would agree our calendars really have gotten full the last few weeks. So I can understand when you have 3-day notice. But I do also think some people were hesitant because of the yes, no. But I decided to respond because I had been saying certain things publicly. And I thought, well, I've been saying them publicly anyway. I will respond because I am not of the mindset that we can't do something or we shouldn't do something when it's election year. I think we should do something.
Because that's been one of the expressions of by a number of people, not only people from within the legislature or outside the legislature, that there's a fear that if there was any action that would result in some form of taxation or use of the permanent fund, then that would count against anyone running for reelection, basically.
That may well be. And so from both sides of the aisle, there have been people that believe that it's not something that should be handled in 2016. But I believe that, election or no election, that just looking at the numbers and where we are, that we do need to face it. It's the most important thing.
And you stand in the minority here, by the way, in this sense. There were only four yes votes out of the 11 for action this year.
Yes.
Yeah. And that crossed, of course, interestingly enough, from the majority and minority lines. Everyone was in agreement that there would be cuts. I think, and this comes back to the question of what's the number or what kind of cuts before any other discussion begins, because we're still talking about something in the order of $2 billion. Where are $2 billion in cuts coming from? Or is it that not the amount that has to be done before thinking about other forms of income?
Well, if you look back to the 2006 budget, which is less than 10 years ago, well, by next year it'll be 10 years ago, we would be about there. And you could even adjust for inflation and population growth. And I don't remember in 2006 suffering terribly as a state. So I think there is quite a bit of room. I don't know the exact numbers at this moment. I can certainly research it where we can bring it down. I understand you could cut every state employee and still not be at that point. So I understand that most of it's in formula spending, in education and Medicaid. Those are big things. So you'd have to go in and adjust formulas. And Mike, to be perfectly honest, I'm willing to do that. I know we'd have to be careful doing that, but for instance, we have the most generous Medicaid program in the United States. And I'm not talking about the expanded population being added. I'm talking about just the number of things that we cover. It's more generous than most Cadillac health insurance plans. So
you suggesting that should be cut? Or can it be cut?
I'm suggesting that we should go look at our formula and what we cover and reconsider, because, it's one thing when we had plenty of money, but now we don't. And, if we want to make sure we have a trooper, we want to make sure that a school can stay open. I think we have to look at these things. In education as well, someone accused me, well, you're willing to look at education because when your children were in public schools, I had four children who went through public schools. There was plenty of money, and there wasn't this problem. Well, I asked legislative research to build a chart for me, apples to apples, based accounting for inflation on the students, the spending per student, and when my youngest was first in school. I mean, my oldest was first in school, which would have been the early 80s. It was $600 less per student. A dozen years, it was about $2,000 less per student. So,
And that's adjusting for inflation.
That's adjusting for inflation, apples to apples. I believe that my kids received excellent educations. They've all been incredibly successful, and I won't get on here and brag about that, but they went to fine schools and did very well. And so I think that we have to look at these things. We are a top spender in the nation with education, yet our results are sadly toward the bottom. And there are things that we can be doing. Did you see the film Paper Tiger that was shown at the Glenn Massey Theater or maybe it hasn't been shown yet. I don't know. I had a conflict, so I wasn't able to attend. But it's an approach, particularly for alternative, for the high-risk students, very innovative, and it's not something that is going to cost. But those kind of things are what we need to be looking at instead of adding dollars, more and more dollars to education. So, and I love teachers. I support teachers. They're saints in my good teachers are, they're like nurses. We mm-hmm. we need them, and it's like they have a calling on their life, and it's a special magic they have with students.
So what I'm taking away from what you're saying is that like actually down here at the bottom, Bob Heron, he gave a very succinct answer. He agreed with you, by the way, yes, that something should be done and that cuts should be considered. But he had three words, consider all options. Mm-hmm. That was it. And I guess that is going to be the interesting question. I know that Dermot Cole, a longtime observer of the scene, as well as Scott Goldsmith, as well as Tim Bradner, people who have been around a long time and have looked at and looked very deeply into the numbers and the swirling effect when you take something away here and think, well, we're just saving money, but you're kicking perhaps something out from under quite a bit of the rest of the economy, et cetera. The larger events that are happening where our form of oil, et cetera, is being displaced in many ways by shale oil and the rest of the country. And this whole swirling environment where we have perhaps gone, arguably some would suggest, through a golden age of oil-derived income, mm-hmm. and that it may never come back again quite the mm-hmm. same way. And so considering all options seems to be a worthwhile thing. I think you've made a good point around where you stand with these things. There we only have a few minutes left, and I'm curious. There's one specific local issue that has popped up, and that was discussed by Representative Culver in an interview with the Frontiersman's editorial staff, and that has to be an area which also has cost the state a lot, and that's the whole correctional system, in particular the fact that we have a very large facility in Sutton and another smaller but large facility here, correctional facility in Palmer, and these are being considered for essentially elimination, which will have effect in many ways in the local area as well. Have you thoughts about that?
I do, and but before I do, I want to finish up the fiscal conversation, because I did have one more comment that.
Yeah.
As far as considering all options, I attended the fiscal forum at the University of Alaska, and ICER and different ones presented. And, you know, I'm listening to all the options, including state income tax, statewide sales tax, those kind of options. And one of the things that really caught my attention and why I believe a phased approach of trimming and then looking at, and get this carefully, I want to look at using a portion, some of the interest earnings from the earnings reserve, not looking at all at the corpus of the fund. And when using some of that earnings reserve, first you would set aside the inflation proofing money, you transfer that back into the fund so it continued to grow like we want it to. And you would also set aside funds for PFT checks. So I just want to make that clear. But at that fiscal forum at the university, one of the things that was really a real takeaway for me at that point was that when you transfer money out of the private sector into the government sector, it is more devastating to the economy than trimming the government sector some, because the private sector always already has to roll back. We've been hearing actually about layoffs with the oil industry, with Shell, et cetera. And this is an exercise that private businesses go through routinely when they have hard times. And I believe it is, you know, when I think about the economy and families overall, you know, we could take money from the private sector and prop up the government sector, and the families that work for the government would do very well, but it would be, you know, it would be more damaging to the families that work for the private sector. So to keep a balance and to be less impactful on the economy, it is better to trim the government sector, and the private sector will naturally take some hits too with that, because the private sector does contracting and different things to support government sector. that spreads it out more evenly. So I just wanted to say that I do look at all options, but that transfer of the dollar from private into the government sector is more harmful to the state economy overall. And what we want to do is we want to learn from what happened in the 80s. And what's ahead may require, some people may end up leaving the state, but we don't want it to be as devastating as the 80s. Mm-hmm. And we want to be smarter. And we do have some money in savings. So we want to be smart about that.
So back to, and it's not, and actually it feeds right into the corrections issue, because the corrections system has a large number of employees as well. And there have been, of course, discussions about private versus public, et cetera. But I know that there's going to be a meeting and there's going to be considerable discussion about changes to the correctional system. We have about a minute left here. In that time, what's your sense of what's happening there?
Yeah, the mentioning the scheduling, hopefully we'll get to a little bit of that, but I have two other conflicts, so I won't be in that whole entire meeting. I do sit on the corrections finance subcommittee,
okay.
So I'll have more time to delve into it. The safety of the community is most important, and so I like the emphasis to find out how this is going to impact the community. I do know I've talked to the correctional officers. I believe we will hold them harmless, that the as far as they may end up having to work in different capacities, but if we can hold the population from growing at the rate, the correctional officers will still have jobs. It's just we may not be adding new correctional officers at the rate that we have in the past if we can slow the growth down of the inmate population, if that makes sense.
Right.
And the use of the ankle monitor, you know, Texas, different places have done this because of not being able to keep up with the growth. But we have to look, who are we letting out? Is this going to be safe for our communities? And that is the question, because it's not just violence. We're not going to put violent criminals out on an ankle monitor. But are we going to be putting people out on ankle monitors who have a pattern of stealing and are going to be infringing on people's property rights? I mean, there's a lot of concern. I know Vicki Wallner with her watch group, they're very concerned about that. And I would agree, that's important. We have to look at that and make sure who we're letting out are the kind of inmates that aren't going to inflict on our rights as the public.
And if we had another half hour or an hour, we could continue on with this, but we don't. So I want to thank Representative Hughes for coming in here and sharing at a time which is really getting hot with a special session, with all the meetings going on, et cetera. Any last comments? You've got about 10 seconds.
Well, we didn't talk about Gasline, but people can always call my office, 376-3725. Had some people come Friday and Saturday for chats, and we did talk gas lines, so that was good, but my door's open.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hughes.
Give me a call.
All righty.